Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.
Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel, brought to you by Stockton Mortgage.
And Dan, we have a terrific guest, a guy I've known for years, the legendary Alabama Hall of Fame basketball coach, Sonny Smith. Sonny, welcome in. Well, we lost Sonny. We're going to reach back out to him.
Well, I'm glad we lost him because you forgot to say
on the Kim Crawford Wine Celebrity Hotline. Do I get a redo?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they can find Sonny, you get a redo.
I like those redos, man. All the turnovers I had in my life, I'd like to have a redo on all of them, right?
Man.
Oh, Lordy. Well, Sonny, you know, he had some great players.
Yeah.
Barkley, Person.
Charles Barkley is one of my favorites.
Funny boy, isn't he?
Oh, he is funny. And he says stuff on TV, and that's the best part about the NBA games is watching that pregame show on TNT with the boys.
And now on the Kim Crawford Wines Celebrity Hotline, legendary coach Sonny Smith. I'm glad we got you back, Sonny.
Oh, I'm glad to be there. How you guys doing? If you got any eligibility, I'll offer you a scholarship or a car, apartment, whatever I can. You're my kind of player.
Sonny, let me tell you something. Pratt got a lot more than that at UK. You're going to have to come up with a stronger offer.
Hey, would a dealership do, Mike? I'll give you a dealership.
Sonny, we want to talk to you. And when I called the other day about the goings on at Auburn, I know you've watched them practice, but before that, I don't know if people remember those heyday at Auburn, the heydays you had with Barkley and Persons and Coach of the Year in the SEC. Hey, man, that had to be a lot of fun.
It really was. Auburn never could really gain a reputation as a basketball school, but what we did there during that stretch in the 80s is we made it very competitive. We made it a place that is tough to come to and win. And, of course, it does. It lasts through about a 4 or 5 year period, but it kind of got Auburn off on the right foot. Now, and we were playing in the old arena, which you, Dan, I'm sure all of you have been there at one time or other.
Oh, yeah.
And it was hard place to fill. You seated over 13,000. And when we played somebody, I could tell how many people were going to be in the stands by who we were playing. You know, like if we were playing Mississippi State, we'd have 2,000. If we were playing Alabama, we'd have 8,000 to 10,000. You know, people were like in a fixed situation from a standpoint of support. But it got a lot better over the years. And this new arena that Bruce Pearl has now, it's almost a sold house every night, sold out house every night, and it's a beautiful basketball facility, and it's given them pretty much a basketball reputation, somebody hard to deal with.
Sonny, I was saying while we were trying to get you back on the line that Charles Barkley is one of my favorite people. Got to know him a little bit through the NBA. Did you have to give Charles a dealership to get him to come to Auburn, or what?
How? You know, probably it sounds crazy. Probably gave him less than anybody ever recruited. I used to tell people that all the time. They look at yes, Sonny's lying again. But let me tell you something. Charles was not heavily recruited. Charles was struggling grade-wise, not from a standpoint of intelligence, because he just didn't try. And he had to pass a certain course to be eligible to be recruited his last year. So people did not recruit him really hard until his senior year. And we had a great player. He never made it big in the NBA, named Bobby Lee Hurt, that played at Alabama. Well, the two met in a high school game in Birmingham in one of the tournaments, district, regional type things, and he destroyed Bobby Lee Hurt, like 26 points, 22 rebounds, and like 11 block shots. And all of a sudden, he became a big item. Prior to that point, he was not heavily recruited. And we had been in on him strong because we had two teachers from Auburn working in that school, and they were throwing Auburn at him every day. And so Auburn was a little bit ahead on Charles's radar before the other teams really got involved. But Charles had amazing ability that hadn't come out yet, but the potential to do those things was there, and you could see it. You always thought, well, he's going to be fat and he's going to get fatter, but it didn't matter how much he weighed, he could really play.
Sonny, we talked about Charles and how much fun he is to listen to on the television, but Chuck Persons and Charles Barkley, two of the top players ever at Auburn, were they fun to coach? I mean, what was the fun part of coaching those two guys?
Person was a player's coach, you know. I mean, he knew everything that you run. He was a highly motivated kid, motivated himself. Charles was totally different. He was a have fun kind of guy, didn't like to practice hard, and it made it tough to practice him. I tell people now, I didn't used to do this, I say I did not know how to coach superstars because I never had any. You think about that. Coaches get up and talk about how they handle or treat or work with a player, and some people have never had players like a Charles Barkley, and I had never had one. The closest thing to a superstar that I had before is a name you guys probably haven't heard. His name was Alan Bristow. He played at Virginia Tech for us, but he had every what a star player quality would have, except maybe speed. And you know, but he was a dream to coach, so I thought all superstars are that way, but it's not that way. And I think coaches today ought to think about, am I good enough to coach a superstar? How would I coach a superstar? I think I'll write a book about it one of these days, because I'd never coached one. I wouldn't put Chuck Person in a superstar quality until we'd had him for a while. But now coming in, I knew Charles had those qualities. I just wondered if I could control them, and it was difficult. We butted heads quite a bit. And I think if I had it all to do over, I would learn how to coach a superstar before I got him.
Well, Dan, I had a neat moment a couple years ago in the NCAA, because I've known Sonny since he coached at Virginia Tech and other places. And, you know, he took a bunch of his teams to the NCAA tournament, Sweet 16. But we're sitting there courtside, and he's doing the radio at one end for Auburn, and I'm doing Kentucky. We're playing Auburn in the game, the right to go to the Final Four. And I'm sitting there, and we lost, and, you know, that was a tough one to lose. And I walked down, and Sonny had the biggest smile on his face. And I told him, I said, Sonny, enjoy it. I mean, you deserve it, because you were so close so many times. And he was so happy for that team go to the Final Four. I remember that.
Sonny, it's nice that you still get to be around the program. I know this year Mike got to do the home games, but had to do the road games from a little studio in Lexington. What was your situation at Auburn?
We did them on a Zoom from the top of the football stadium. It's amazing that we did that. And you know what? I would like to do every game that way, and I'll tell you why. You can see all corners of the arena. You don't miss anything. And when you sit in the middle of the court there, when you're on site, you don't see as much as a game as you think you do. But when you're looking down on it like we did from up in a corner, the highest part of the Coliseum, of the arena, I'm sorry, you had a better idea of what was going on the court. So I'm for doing games on Zoom any day they want to do it.
Sonny, a lot of conversation before we get into what's going on currently at Auburn. Well, this kind of is. A lot of conversation about name, image, and likeness. What's your thoughts on that? How would that have affected you if you were coaching or when you were coaching?
Say that again. I did not catch the question.
The name, image, and likeness controversy going through college sports. How would you have dealt with that when you were coaching?
You know, I think the first thing a coach has got to do, and this is going to be a roundabout answer, is recognize that this is a player's game. It's not a coach's game. And I think years ago, it was more so a coach's game as opposed to a player's game. So I think what you got to do now is what's best for the players, and hope that it is the best for basketball. Now that's a kind of a crazy answer right there, but what I'm basically saying is I don't know what I really would do.
Sonny, of course, another thing that has really popped up big this year is the transfer portal. And I know that's been a benefit to Auburn, but then you have schools like Georgia who lost their entire squad. What's your opinion of the transfer portal?
I think it's one of those deals. I think we got to look at it as the rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer.
Yep.
And I think we've got to do something about it, because none of us want it to be that way. To keep this game as competitive as it need to be, you got to stop it from. All right, let's take three transfers up looking for a place to go. Kentucky's one of the places. It's going to take the other eight or nine. It's going to take a hard deal to get them to come to their place. They're going to go to Kentucky. So I don't like this transfer in 1 year type of deal. I think it's going to make the rich richer and the poor is going to get poorer.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I also think that you're going to have to recruit with 1 year in mind, because a guy you're also going to have to find out what is the one thing that's going to keep him with you and coach in that regard. I think you're going to have to coach according to the player's wants more so than you are what you want. And I think it's going to make coaching just a little bit different, because the guy's going to get mad at you in one day in practice and looks to be getting a transfer portal the next, you know, that type of thing. I don't like that as much. I think it's going to change the way coaches have to coach. And I don't know if I made good sense in what I said, but it's one and done type of thing.
Well, to your point, Sonny, you mentioned that Charles didn't like to practice real hard, and that was an issue with you. Would Charles, after 1 year with you, pushing him and driving him and him not liking to practice, would Charles enter the transfer portal?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Sonny.
I tell you what, I've thought a lot about writing a book about how to coach superstars. I'd never had one. I got one with him. And, you know, Chuck Person was close in that category. Chris Morris was close in that category. And a kid named had an illness that kept him from being named Bobby Cattage, played in the NBA for a number of years. If I had known the way to make those guys better. And, you know, the old-time approach of drive them, the hard-nosed type of approach. A lot of coaches, you grew up thinking that's the way you're supposed to do it. And I was always under the impression before I got into coaching that you treat them all the same. Well, you look around at the most successful coaches today, in my opinion, they don't treat them all the same. And I think that if I had it to do over, I would try to coach in a different manner and instead of hard sell driving type of thing, you get a lot of people saying, "Boy, he's tough on them." Well, it don't matter how tough on them you are; it's whether you win with them or not. You know, if I had a chance to coach Charles Barkley again, I think I would coach him totally different.
Yeah, we've said before that if there was a transfer portal when Coach Rupp was around, everybody would have been in it after 1 year. So because he was that kind of coach, there's no question about that.
Well, I was too. Not a lot of people knew that because it's like old Sonny, he's funny, you know, easy going. I was totally different as a coach, but I tell you what. I sometimes think that maybe you ought to coach your according to your personality, and be to the players what they think of you off the court as well as on the court. You know, because I was a different animal when it come to practice. I wasn't Sonny Smith anymore, and I think players have somewhat of a hard time accepting that or learning how to handle that. I may be wrong about that, but all of this is on a look back. If I had to do it over type of attitude.
Right. Well, Sonny, bring us up to date with what your man Bruce Pearl is doing down at Auburn. He's raided Georgia recently for DJ, and he's a pretty good player. And they practice. You've been up there and had a chance to look at him. Bring us up to speed.
I think they're going to be real good. I think they're going to be solid, like they always are. Bruce Pearl is an outstanding coach in all phases of the game. He has their attention. He is a disciplinarian, and he does it without hard drive, so to speak. He doesn't get all over them, but he gets his point across. He gets players that can play three or four positions, you know, so he can post everybody, so everybody can shoot a three. I watched the kid he's got coming in from Kessler, coming in from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I watched him shoot around the perimeter the other day. He shot 13 threes and made 12 of them. And I was thinking that's exactly what Bruce Pearl looks for, a post player that can move away from the basket and put five on a perimeter. And it looks to me like he's got that pretty much. I think I've not seen the guy that's transferring in that's supposed to be a great point guard. And I'll say this, if Bruce has good point guard play, I think they're going to be a solid in the race type team this next year. He's got a lot of good players returning, but I think Kessler's addition is going to be big. And the transfer from Charleston is, I have not seen him play, but they say the quickness factor and being able to give up the ball, handle the ball, is going to make them very good at the point also.
Sonny, you made a great point about the way the game has changed, and that is nobody. I mean, even 7-footers don't play with their back to the basket anymore. Everybody's out there looking to shoot that 3-pointer. Do you think that improves the game, or has the game taken a step back?
You know, I think it's really exciting to see a big guy step away from the basket and make a three. And I also think it's a big thing when he can step away and they have to come and guard him and open up that lane. The game is about, to me now, the three-point shot and who can keep the lane open for the drive. And when you got a big guy that can step away and make threes, you certainly can open up the lane a lot more that way than any other way. And the high screen and roll, the side pick and rolls, pretty much, you don't see a lot of set plays. You may see a set out of a timeout and flow back into spacing. And I'm taking a long time to answer this, but Bruce Pearl might be the best at spacing I've seen. He has them properly spaced when he comes down the floor, and after the cuts that he makes, he still spaced properly. And I think when a coach can do both, and he does that extremely well, I hope I'm not confusing. I'm talking to two great basketball guys here. I know spacing is a big thing in college basketball today.
Indeed.
And I think Bruce Pearl's one of the best. Run into spacing, stand into spacing, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Sonny, you mentioned the players returning. Flanagan, of the returning players, I really like the way that kid plays. I think he's a special player. Not a great player, not going to be an NBA All-Star, but he could have spent some time in the league. But, man, is he fun to watch as a college player.
Well, I can tell you this. If he shoots the ball this year consistently from three and other positions, they're going to have to look at him. He's strong as a bull. He can guard anybody. And he can rebound a basketball for a guard, and he can play two and three. I'd say he's going to be a natural two if he can make shots on the floor a little, out on the floor a little bit more. And he's a coach's dream. He's the hardest working guy on the floor. Got great leadership ability, and I just like him. His father's a coach. His grandfather's a coach. He's on a coaching family. He'll be a great coach too someday.
Well, Sonny Smith, we appreciate your time. We're going to let you go. You used to do this with Wimp Sanderson, and I heard a lot of people always talk about it. So you're an old pro on the radio.
That one and done. He was done.
Sonny, we appreciate you. You're a legend.
Don't tell him I said that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
You guys, legends for sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonny.
He's funny. A funny guy. And he and Wimp had the show, and they were hilarious. I caught him going through Birmingham one time.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were just hilarious. I mean, jeez. You know, and he made some great points about spacing. That's what they call it, pace and space now. You want to play fast, but when you play fast, teams have a tendency to get out of their spacing.
Right.
And he mentioned that Bruce Pearl, his guys are coached. They'll push it and they'll cut and move, but keep that spacing.
And the other point that he made was keeping the lane open. And that's where I think a lot of these teams might get too concerned or too concentrated on shooting that three-pointer. And if they would look up the court a little more, and you had a big guy. Like last year, the Kentucky was a perfect example because Sarr could step out on the court. And so rather than, you know, just take one three-pointer after another, if you get to the basket, you can either get a layup or you can kick it out to an open guy. So I thought he made some great points. And, you know, this is a great idea you had about getting somebody from each SEC school on some connection to talk about it. And you're smart, too, because you get media guys who know what they're talking about.
You think.
Well, I mean, you get Sonny Smith. He didn't fall off the last pumpkin wagon.
No. He's special.
He can be frank and he can be truthful, but having all these people on talking about SEC basketball this coming year, it sounds, I mean, you know, there are a couple outliers, but it sounds like everybody's going to be loaded in the SEC this year.
I said to you, and I think you are in total agreement, that this year could be as good as they've had in a while, up front, top. And the depth. And again, the comparison I'm going to make, and you, it was a Big Ten last year, and your point was they didn't do well in the NCAA. But boy, as a league, to go through a league and have that kind of upfront power, and then you didn't take a night off when you went to Indiana.
Right.
I mean, everybody, they fired the coach and all this and that, but they won some games. They beat some people.
And they had, eight teams in the tournament?
Yeah. So yeah. I think that's where the SEC is heading. And I'm glad to see it. Now, Big Blue Nation's not going to be happy if Kentucky doesn't win it. Maybe they finish second or third. Who knows? Maybe they win it. But I'm just saying, don't expect to win this league every year if it continues to have the depth in talent. And, of course, we know they've got terrific coaches.
Yeah,
they really do.
Yeah, that's, you know, that goes hand in hand. The fact that, you know, Sonny just said, Bruce, now you can, whatever you think of Coach Pearl, you know, he can coach. There's no question about that. And so there's been an upgrade in the talent level. But there certainly has been an upgrade recently in the coaching profession as well.
Bruce Pearl was always very nice to me, and he came up to me the first time time I met him. I mean, I knew who he was. We're at the SEC tournament. And I had spoken, and I have great respect for Ray Mears. He tried to recruit me very, very diligently. And when we played them, he was always complimentary to us. And he didn't like Coach Rupp, okay? You book that one. But he never degraded us as players, as a team. And after I was done playing, I got to know him a little bit working with the Converse Rubber Company. The gentleman, he was then the gentleman he was when he came to my house and sat down. And
you're talking about Ray Mears.
Yeah, Ray Mears. And so I spoke about Ray Mears a couple times in a broadcast when Bruce was at Tennessee. So he comes up to me, and he wore the orange jacket is what started the thing. And I said, well, you know, Coach Mears did that. Coach Aberdeen, the whole staff, they did that. And I said, you know, that was really pretty cool. I mean, it was out of the ordinary back then, but he started wearing the orange jacket. Okay, when he was at Tennessee with some good teams. So he comes over to me in the Hyatt, I think it was, and we stood there and talked 15 minutes. He told me how much he respected Coach Mears and what he had done for basketball at Tennessee and how he appreciated me talking about it. Then I told him my relationship with Coach Mears. And so we had a nice conversation, and his teams, I tell you, Dan, and Sonny kind of talked about this, but I actually believe it's in my heart of hearts. Outside of a defensive guy or an offensive guy or the ability to shoot the three, you can put that aside. It's important, yes. But I think the two most important things, and John Thompson at Georgetown was able to do this, you get your team to play hard and share the ball, you're going to win a ton of games.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely
and
right.
Pearl gets that done.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like he's got more talent than he's had since he's been at Auburn. So that that'll be something to keep an eye on.
It's
going to
be a battle in the SEC.
Yeah, when you were talking about Ray Mears and wearing the orange coat, could you see Coach Rupp wearing a Kentucky blue sport coat?
I can't see Fred Taylor wearing a scarlet or a gray sport coat at Ohio State. All those guys that were legendary coaches back then. Coach Mears was one of a kind, man. They broke the mold. They brought him into this world. He coached his way up to Tennessee, and then he broke the mold. They let him stay.
And the thing that was interesting about Coach Mears was they'd hold the ball. There was no shot clock, and they dribble that ball and dribble that ball and dribble that ball till they got a decent look at the basket, and so Coach Mears called his team the greatest defensive team in the country, and it wasn't because they could guard you, it was because you got so few opportunities because they held the ball for 2 and 3 and 4 minutes at a time.
You used to like to say that because Pete would score 55 or 60 on us, but he might only score 45 or 48 against Tennessee.
Yeah.
And he loved to say that.
Because they only had 24 shots at the basket. Oh, no. Mike, let me tell you about my friends at Berno's Pizza. There are 13 area locations in Kentuckiana. It's my favorite spot to watch the game. Great food, great drinks, and great people. Berno's has you covered for lunch or dinner. All Berno's now delivering alcohol, carry out, and delivery to your home. Support your local businesses, and Bear Nose is now hiring all positions. Yeah, it's that good. Bear Nose Pizza.
Ready for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back, Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel, presented by Stockton Mortgage. What would you have in your dream house? The financing may not be as glamorous as a butler's pantry, but it can leave you set up for success or leave you frustrated. The folks at Stockton Mortgage can craft a mortgage that is exactly the right fit for you. Your dream home is just a mortgage away. Go to Stockton.com. What they say at Stockton is true. Find your home and they'll take care of the rest. NMLS number 88259, equal housing lender.
Man, you just blew right through that. You
yeah,
are getting
but I,
so
but
good
I almost
at that.
Said 82 instead of 82. So
it's funny. 82 isn't that 82?
No, that's 8259.
But 82 is 82.
Well, I guess you can look at it that way.
Oh, Lordy. Oh, my God. I have to tell you, though, we talked about the pro game, and I think we have Chris hanging on here, but I have to talk about the pro game. Real 30 seconds here.
Okay.
Atlanta's making their run.
Yeah.
And John Collins, the kid that played at Wake Forest, about 6'8", they're on a run. Sixers are on their heels. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a stunning reversal of the game, right? And I knew the orchestra leader had left the arena when he banks a three-pointer straight on. I mean, banks it, and then just grins and runs down the floor. I knew
the game
was over. Yes, sir.
The game was over. Mike, we're pleased to welcome on the Kim Crawford's Wine Celebrity Hot List.
Yeah, we're
Hot list, hotline. former Major League Baseball star and, of course, baseball analyst on ESPN and a native of Louisville, Chris Burke. Chris, my first question, first of all, thanks for joining us. My first question is, how did Kentucky or Louisville let you get away from St. X High School to Tennessee?
Well, good to be with you guys. Well, I don't know that they let me get away so much as I, you know, Tennessee was rolling pretty good there in the mid to late 90s. So for me, I wanted to play in the SEC. Kentucky had been on a tough stretch, and Tennessee had been rolling. So Coach Delmonico convinced me that Knoxville wasn't that far away. So my mom wanted me to go to Notre Dame. It was actually kind of came down between Tennessee and Notre Dame, but I decided the Southeast was a little warmer climate to play college baseball in than South Bend, Indiana.
Now, would you have crossed paths with Todd Helton when you were at Tennessee? Yes.
So Todd's last year was 95. My first year was the spring of 99.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So there was pretty good.
But I kind of – the mojo that he and R.A. Dickey created is what, you know, kind of captured my attention. So even though I didn't play with him, I think he's definitely part of the reason that I ended up there.
Well, Chris, Tennessee has just turned this thing around. They were struggling 2 years ago, man, and now they got a lights-out baseball team. What? Tell us, give us your thoughts on your alma mater.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. You know, I would say that, you know, of the, let's say, the big three men's sports in the SEC, you'd probably say that football is the hardest sport to turn around because obviously you have to win your division to get the conference championship game, and then the depth of quality players that you need just takes a while. But you guys know in basketball, you get a couple real dudes and you can go from, you know, like Kentucky could win 25 games next year. Nobody'd be surprised after struggling this year, right? Whereas in baseball, the recruiting process happens very early. So you're talking about 8th, 9th, 10th graders that are committed. So when you get a job that's been on the down and out, to flip that thing, you got to be really astute in the junior college game. You obviously have to be very good at developing the players that are already on campus, not only their game, but also from a culture standpoint, because obviously you're there probably because they haven't been winning, right? And then you got to get out there and find some kids that maybe were a little bit overlooked in their recruiting classes from a grade standpoint, and maybe win with some three stars, so to speak. And I would say that from that standpoint, Tony Vitello has done, like, if you were going to draw up how to rebuild a program, he has checked every single box along the way. So you think about when he took the job in 2000, he got at the end of 17, so 2018, 2019, 2020, and now 21. And in 18, they got better, but obviously still missed the tournament. 19, they win 40 games, make a regional final. 2020, they're 15-2, and may have made, you know, a deep run last year. And then this year, they're, you know, they win 50 games, and here they are in Omaha. So it is not kind of out of nowhere, even though it may feel like that, but it's actually been a very stair-step process where they've just gotten better each and every year. And, guys, you guys have been around sports a long time, and we know the adage of a team takes on the identity of their head coach is true more often than not. And this team, if you were going to build a team around Tony Vitello's image, it'd be this one, because they play with a chip on their shoulder, ton of energy. They play very loose, and they're not afraid to stick their chest out. And those are things that you would say to describe Tony V.
And Chris, it not only turning it around, but turning it around in the SEC, unbelievable. There's three SEC teams going to Omaha, and of course, the favorite to get there, Arkansas, didn't make it. So the competition to turn it around in the SEC also makes it difficult.
Well, I think that's the thing, right? There is no easy routes in the SEC and in any sport, but you could argue that baseball is as deep as any of the sports in that conference. And you're definitely swimming with the sharks. I will say that the interesting thing about the SEC in baseball, similar to basketball, is, you don't have to win the league to have a great year, right? Whereas in football, now I guess they're going to 12-team playoff. But for the most part, if you don't win the SEC championship, you can't win the whole thing. Whereas in baseball, Vanderbilt in 2014, their first championship, they finished fourth in the SEC – or excuse me, sixth in the SEC and won the whole thing, right? Mississippi State was fourth this year in the SEC, went 0-2 in the conference tournament, and here they are in Omaha. So it is a monster rebuild. I'm certainly not trying to downplay that. But there is opportunity to where you can really have a great season, even if you maybe haven't quite gotten all the way over the hump to the top of the heap. But you look at this Tennessee team, I mean, they've been right there all year long, and they've done it with an old team. But Tony's added a couple of pieces along the way. For instance, Blade Tillwell, their number two starter, Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert, both sophomore outfielders. So he's really developed the guys that were already on campus. And then he's plugged in some pieces that have really grown up quickly.
Well, Chris, let's move on to the tournament we have starting Saturday. There's eight teams there. You've looked at the draw. Who do you like? Do you like Vandy or Mississippi State or Texas? Who do you like? Tennessee?
Well, I would say the favorite. I would say the chalk is favorite on each side. Like, you would think Vanderbilt and their stud pitching would be the favorite. I think Texas and their 1-2 punch, Ty Madden leading the way for Texas, and it's kind of been a fairly uneventful ride for Texas to the CWS. Those two feel like the favorites. If I was looking for another team on each side, I really think that NC State team is interesting. You're talking about a team that was 1-8 in ACC play. Very old. They've got probably the most talented closer. Kevin Copps is now surprisingly out of the tournament with NC State knocking off Arkansas. And you guys know, any team that has the grit to not only come back from a 1-8 start in conference play, but also they lost 21-2 in game one of the Super Regional at Arkansas. Yet here they are in Omaha. So you knock off the number one team, you do it on the road, you do it after losing game one. Like, that's a team that's pretty scary, and they're on Vanderbilt's side. On the Texas side, I would say that Tennessee has a puncher's chance because their offense is just that scary, and I think their pitching's good enough. And then, you've got Mississippi State and Virginia, who certainly you could see, if everything broke right, could get it done, but I would probably, I would say that, the two favorites would be Vanderbilt and Texas on either side, and then the two other teams that I think are very dangerous. Even though I do think Vanderbilt's side of the bracket, none of those teams would surprise me if they won. I feel like on the other side, it's either going to be Texas or Tennessee.
Chris, you mentioned Vandy and their pitching staff. Rocker and Leiter just been unbelievable. I think they gave up one run in the two games in the Super Regional. The way the schedule falls, if they would get in the winner's bracket, can they go all the way with those two pitchers, or will they have to start a third pitcher at some point?
So the schedule sets up for some different options. Most people, what they'll do is, if you win, so if Vanderbilt plays Saturday, Monday, if they win, regardless, win or lose, but let's just say they win. Saturday, if Rocker wins, and Monday, if Leiter wins, then they don't play again until Friday. Friday, most people are saying, okay, I'm 2-0. The team I'm playing against has to beat me twice. So most people are going to start their number three. Because oh, by the way, Vanderbilt's number three is a kid named Christian Little that might be the number one pick in 2 years. Yeah, like he's that good. Okay, 94-97, changeup slider, 6'4", just stud. Like, you know, not too dissimilar than what Rocker looked like 2 years ago. Okay, so he's their number three. So if you win that game with your number three, now you got Rocker on Monday night for the first game of the championship series. Leiter comes back on game two. Do you see what I'm saying? So if you push Rocker to pitch on Friday on short rest and you lose, now not only do you then have to throw Leiter on short rest, but now you've probably burned them both for the championship series. So normally you need at least three starters. But if you do win three in a row, You got Rocker and Leiter sitting there in game one and two, and it is, boy, you like your spot if you're a Commodore fan.
Well, Chris, we're going to let you go on this one. And my question is, does the volunteer bats, you mentioned a puncher's chance, is the key to the game the volunteer bats?
Yeah, and the question will be, how big does the ballpark play? So if the wind is just light, it usually tends to blow in when it's warm. But if the wind is just light, the ball will still jump up, because I'm convinced the ball's juiced right now. From the tournament, you know, I'm not saying there's some like conspiracy going on. I'm just saying I think this batch of balls is jumping more than we've seen. Like, just look at the tournament home run numbers; they're up about 25%. And that's not to take away from our hitters. I think we got a really talented group of hitters in college baseball. But the ball does feel like it's flying. So I do think the home run, so long as it's not blown in like 20, the home run's going to be a factor. But Tennessee, if you look at their regional and super regional, I mean, they had 6 home runs in their game 2 victory against LSU. Like, they are leaning on the long ball. So I think if you're a Tennessee fan, so long as you don't get a real stiff breeze, they can hurt you 1-9. Like, that offense has depth, and they can hit it out of the ballpark at any spot in the batting order. So they definitely have a chance to bully people offensively. And the pitching's good enough. I mean, Chad Dallas has won 11 games. Blake Tidwell has won 10 games. Like, they've got enough on the mound. But if the ballpark can play just fair, I think you got to like Tennessee's chances to play a while.
Chris, one of the best jobs in the conference, LSU, is open. What do you hear about that job? I mean, that is a sweetheart job, is it not?
It is. You know, how do you view the Kentucky basketball job, right? It's
how
fits your skin. You know what I'm saying? So obviously, you're gonna get a great salary. You got a chance to win national championship every year, but it's not necessarily for everybody, right? So, but I think it'll come down between the Cliff Godwin at East Carolina or Mike Bianco at Ole Miss. It looks like that's kind of a two-horse race.
Chris, we really appreciate your time. We appreciate your insight. We thank you for coming on, and we hope you'll come back and join us soon.
All right, guys. You got it. Pleasure to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Chris. He's good. I've listened to him on television.
Yeah.
I really enjoy his analysis of a baseball game. He's quite a baseball player himself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Did you see the interesting thing when I don't have any idea where this came from, but when Peyton Manning was quarterbacking the Broncos, he used to go to the line and Omaha was some key on his Colts.
Or a fake key.
And he'd go to the line and say, Omaha, Omaha. And he got some, I think he did some ads for tourism for Omaha, Nebraska.
Really?
And now his Tennessee Volunteers are going to Omaha, Omaha for the College World Series. It's pretty cool.
We need to start something here at this show about Kentucky. We'll start the show. Let's go to the line, Kentucky, Kentucky, Kentucky tourism. Right?
There you go. Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
I've got to bring this up before we call it a day. 45 years ago today, the NBA's winningest team, the Kentucky Colonels.
ABA,
I'm sorry, was left out of the NBA. That's where I was going.
Gotcha.
The NBA celebrates today a key date in NBA history when Denver, Indiana, And San Antonio and the New York Nets went into the NBA and left our Kentucky Colonels out.
45 years ago today,
yes, sir.
The merger happened.
Yes, sir.
Yep, yep. And I was thankful that at that time I was a member of the Denver Nuggets and not the Kentucky Colonels.
No, that's not true. You were thankful you weren't playing for the Baltimore Claws. That's who you were thankful with, right?
And we've said this a lot before, but the Colonels were one of the more stable and outstanding franchises in the ABA, and it was a shame that they weren't one. It didn't matter to me anymore. Of course, I would have loved to have an NBA.
Well, you wouldn't
team
have been
now.
At Denver if they thought they were going to go to the league.
You don't
in
think
the merger.
So? Oh,
no.
I don't know about that. That's no. I think John was John Y. Brown was looking to cut
move
it,
you. He
cut,
didn't like you.
Cut his. It was explained to me that even though we won the championship, the ABA championship, the franchise still lost money. And John wanted to run it like a business, not like a hobby. And so he had what he felt were two valuable pieces to the franchise, Artis and I, and that he was going to sell one of us. And I think it was Frank Ramsey who told John Y that I wouldn't have a long professional career because my legs were too thick. I have no idea what that means, but so he thought by selling me instead of Artis, he was getting a break because Artis's career. No, I think even if at that time John thought that the Colonels were going to be part of the merger, I think I still would have been gone.
You know, that's a funny correlation you just brought up, because I knew college coaches that looked at big men back in the day and they looked at their neck. If they had too long a neck, they didn't think they were going to be any good. I'm going, are you kidding me? I mean, I heard that discussed.
But John was a trip. I'm assuming he still is. I haven't talked to him for a couple of years, but I've said this before. John would have a decision to make. Let's say it was a basketball decision, and he'd call 20 people around the league and ask their opinion, and then he'd stop and get a drink on the way home and do what the bartender told him to do. So you never knew where John was headed.
But well, that was kind of like teams back in the day. They didn't have scouting units in their franchise. They drafted off of Street and Smith, the basketball magazine.
Yeah. Well, I've told this story before. When we first went into the NBA, it cost a lot of money. I think it was $4 million, an expansion fee, if you will, to go in. And we didn't get TV money. Of course, the TV money was basically nothing back then. But we didn't get TV money for 3 years. And I think our draft picks were in the middle of the round. So the Nuggets didn't have any money to spend on scouting college players. So what their entire scouting program before the draft would consist of, because we had Larry Brown and Doug Moe, who played at Carolina, and Carl Scheer was very close to the Carolina people. Our scouting program would consist of calling Dean Smith to see who the best player he thought was in the draft. And if you go back and look in that
ACC,
yeah, we either picked a guy in the first round from Carolina, or we pick somebody in the ACC that Dean Smith told us that was the best player he played against that year.
That's amazing. Yeah, it is, and it wasn't as big a business as then as it is now monetarily.
Not close.
But still, there was money on the table. This people were trying to make money. You got traded because John White said, "Look, I'm not going to pay both of you. I'm only going to pay one." So money was important.
Yeah, and of course, John Y., it wasn't a trade, although people change teams to make it look like a trade. But when I was traded to Baltimore and then subsequently to Denver, John Y. got cash. I mean, it wasn't just trading me and not.
I wonder if he really ever got the cash from that crew that owned Baltimore.
No, that's how I wound up in Denver, Mike, because, and I've told this story before, but I was sold to the Baltimore Claws, and I think Tommy Owens had to come back.
South Carolina.
Yeah, had to come back to the Colonels to make it look like it was a trade. But I've heard two different figures. I've heard $300,000 and I've heard $500,000. We ought to get John Y on here and ask him what the real number was.
We could get John Y on.
So he'd come on in a minute. I'm in Baltimore for 10 days. And John, those people didn't have 10 cents, let alone $300,000. So John never got his money. And so I get a call one night after 10 days, and everybody knew that the franchise wasn't going anywhere. Instead of having two-a-day practices, we practiced once in the morning and went to the racetrack in the afternoon. Joe Mullaney was our coach. And so I'm in Baltimore for about 10 days and crying myself to sleep every night. And I get a call from John Y. And John says, Dan, if I get you out of Baltimore, will you say some nice things about me in the Louisville media? Because he was getting hammered in the Louisville media for trading me for Tom Owens. And I said, John, you get me out of Baltimore, I'll do anything you want. He said, okay, come down to room 212. I'm here. And so what he had done was he had called Carl Shear and made the deal for me going. He got the cash. I went from Baltimore to Denver, but John Y got the money, and poor Dave Robish had to go from Denver to Baltimore to make that deal.
That's where his career ended.
Look somewhat legitimate. So, I would have been in Denver regardless of if John had thought he was going to participate in the merger or not.
Something else that happened 27 years ago today. Do you remember O.J. Simpson in the Bronco chase?
Oh, I remember where I was.
Yeah.
I remember
it
exactly.
It was gluing. You just were glued to the TV.
And he was going he was sitting in the back seat. Whoever was driving was going about 20 miles an hour down the 405 in L.A. with, it looked like hundreds of police cars following them. They'd closed the 405. But I remember exactly where I was when it was happening. We were our daughter Sheridan was going to Northwestern, and we were in a restaurant in Chicago, and the whole restaurant gets up and walks into the bar so they can watch the chase on TV.
That's amazing. It's part of history now.
Yep.
And tomorrow we're going to talk a little Georgia basketball with Mike Griffith from Dog Nation.
D-A-W-G. That'll be an interesting conversation. I don't think they've got enough players to field a team.
I think they've got some people out of the portal. By the way, baseball.
Yeah.
Over 2,000 or right at 2,000 baseball players in the portal.
Oh, my goodness.
So I now become a two-portal man, baseball and basketball.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.